Hello and welcome to the Lean on Agile show. I'm your host, Shaheen, and I have a great person today that joined me. He's a mentor. He's an inspirer for me. He's a thought leader, although I don't think that he'd like to be called that in this space. Don Gray. Thank you, Don, for being on the show with me.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let me start by asking this. Who is Don? Tell us more about yourself.
So who is Don? If I could answer that question in less than 40 years, I would sell my house, wear a bed sheet, sit on a mountain somewhere and sell answers. I can give you a brief history, though, and I'll try to make it take less than 40 years.
Sounds good.
I started as something called a control systems engineer. I graduated from college and went into the manufacturing space. So I was the guy who did the engineering, wrote the programs that made product. Mm-hmm. So I, from a real-time background, that went on for about 15 years. And then I became really good. And then I became what I call a techno hammer. And so the techno hammer is a person who gets parachuted into a situation where everybody is running around with their hair on fire, hyperventilating, and worrying about the world coming to an end. And shortly after that time, that took until about 2007, 2008. I actually wrote an article, which is on my website, donaldegray.com. How original is that? Remember to put the E in. Donaldegray.com goes somewhere I have no idea. Called Skills for Software Smoke Jumpers, which sort of described that period of my life. It was published in Better Software, I believe. So that's what I was doing for a living. But in 1995, I went to a workshop called Problem Solving Leadership, which is where we met. Not in 1995, but many years later. Problem-solving leadership gave me information and ideas that corresponded to my work in real time, but was focused on people. And people are actually the creative force in software development. They are also the mechanism of production. ChatGPT is out now. It has yet to be seen how much it will actually impact development. We don't know yet. It's early. But I became more aware of people and how people impact my success and my well-being, how much I impact other people. And so in 95, I went to problem-solving leadership. And at the time, Jerry Weinberg had two other workshops. One was the Congruent Leadership Chain Shop, and that was a week-long residential. And then Software Engineering Management, which was a year-long cohort. I did PSL in 95, 97 was Chain Shop, and what we call SEM was 1998. So I'm still working in the technical space, but I'm starting to do more and more people work, for lack of a better word. Right. So fast forward, we ended around 2007, 2008. During this time frame, the AYE conference was going on, and I had shifted from technical work to working strictly with people. So the title I was using at the time was Agile Coach. Mm-hmm. Started doing Agile coaching in 2007. Proceeded to have fun with it. Got to do a lot of great things. Meet a lot of wonderful people. Then as things changed, again, I started getting a little bit away from the coaching and more into training. So Esther Derby, and I had developed a workshop called Coaching Beyond the Team. which looked at how do you enter an organization, how do you make connections, where does empathy play, how do you go about influencing people, how do you actually design an intervention, what is a good experiment, these sorts of questions. And we did that. It was a three-day workshop. And in 2017, I was asked to fill in for Jerry. I was going to say replace, but nobody replaces Jerry Weinberg. Tremendous individual who sadly passed in August of 2018. But and you've been to PSL. It's a week-long experiential workshop. And I want to say workshop as opposed to class because the participants work. The mornings always start at 9, and the evenings finish when we finish. And for a handful of lucky people, sometimes it goes to very early the next morning. I believe you were one of those.
Yes. Yes.
So does that sort of give you, and then about 2017, I also started working with the GROWS method, which is a way to, it's a focus on software development that embraces things beyond the compiler, the build, the CI/CD pipeline. It looks at a lot of different things. And specifically at the leadership level, at the enabling and enhancing level, which would be your like middle managers, and then at the making level, which is would be your developers. And we even include stuff for the users.
Can I breathe? Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Don, for
so how was 40 years crammed into, I don't know, what, 8 minutes?
Yeah. So one thing that I'm sure it would be interesting for our audience is the transition and the steps that you take and maybe the lessons that you can share with them to work, start working with people, because that's something that we see typically in organizations happen. Someone is very good, savvy in one technical skills, and they get promoted to a people manager. And they don't have, like you, seems that you found out a way to get those skills and become so good at it that now you're teaching PSL and like move on to other stuff. What can you share with our audience on how to find their own way?
Well, I think you said the correct answer. You said the correct words right there. Their own way. Everybody's path is different, but the things that impacted me the most is one. I was from a world, the technical world has a best way. So we have things like CI/CD pipelines. We have clean code. We have lean. We have agile, Scrum, whatever. We have ways of doing things that are good. When you start working with people, the thing to remember is that people are not machines. People have emotions. I think one of the first things to think about when you're working with people is Peter Drucker, management consultant back in the 60s, talked about the fact that what we have now are knowledge workers, that the people who are creating value today work more with their minds. And they are closer to the work than you are if you're a manager. So you have to give them the opportunity to bring the skill, bring their experience, and trust them that they want to use it for the betterment of the team, the product, and the company. And this was like in the mid-60s. Jerry Weinberg famously said, no matter what they tell you, it's always a people problem. So things that people can do is, number one, they should take advantage of training. It's my impression, and I could be wrong. Remember, so statistically, we are talking about a sample size of one. When you have a sample size of one, be careful extrapolating to the world at large. Right. So, my impression is that people who get promoted into the management roles are now getting more training about how to be a manager. Managers are shifting from being a director. You go do this, you go do that. So if you think back to Taylorism, scientific management, you know, everything was structured such that you could tell people exactly what to do and they would do it. Managers are now becoming more coaches. And I'm using that in the sense of, I was working with a client in 2016, and the engineering managers were actually interested in the people. And I mean, not to say that the other types of managers aren't interested in people, but, you know, like, what are your educational goals? Where do you want to go next in your career? How is the family? Much more person related than task related or process related. An interesting book on that topic would be Becoming a Technical Leader by Jerry Weinberg. There are other books out there, but that's where I would probably start, is with that book.
Yeah. And I can attest to that. I was working with a client as well. There was a lady that she was SVP or head, I believe, like very high. And I was with that organization for 20 years. So I asked her for a quick coffee chat, and she was sharing what she observed. And she told me that I got so many trainings on coaching and conflict resolution and all those things that I don't need more one-on-one coaching. I know what to do. So, and not to mention that I was doing a good job or not, but to mention that, as you said, circumstances change, and like the leaders are more coaches, like the organizations are putting them through those kind of training themselves as well. I want to a little bit more talk about PSL for my own sake as well. So you know the history of it better than me. I know that PSL, if I'm correct, I think it was existed before even I was born. So it was started in the 80s or something, I believe. No, I'm wrong.
74, even before that? 74.
74.
1974. Next year will be the 50th year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, we did not have PSL, problem solving leadership. We did not hold it during the pandemic. One of the things Esther and I talk about how could we do PSL remotely? And we've never found a way. We've talked about it. It's something we consider because the world has shifted dramatically due to the pandemic, the COVID pandemic. And to put our hands over our ears and go la, 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 isn't going to be useful.
Right.
But you've been there. You know what's involved. I've never met anybody who said, oh, yeah, and here's how you can do it remotely. It focuses on support. You have a support group. You have learning objectives. You work through a bunch of problems. And through that, you learn to lead and different styles of leading. And we just haven't found a way to do that. So for, 2020 and 2021, we did not hold any PSLs.
Right.
We started again in spring of 2022.
Right.
So, but except for those 2 years, next year will be the 50th year. The workshop has changed some over the years. You've heard me talk about the world has changed.
Right.
if you become perfectly adapted to your current world, you become very rigid and difficult to find it difficult to adapt to change. And the hallmark of a problem-solving leader is the ability to observe and look at motivation, organization, and information. In other words, motivation. Are people happy, sad? Current work in this area would be Daniel Pink, Drive, is a great book. It talks about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And Dr. Kat Hicks just recently came out with this thing from, and it's research. So this is one of the cool things is everything that we've been saying for the last 15, 20, 30 years, there is now research that is supporting these ideas. So let me ratchet back. Dr. Kat Hicks works at Pluralistic, I believe, or with in conjunction with them, has developed this thing called the Developer Thriving Framework. Mm-hmm. And it says that you want developers to thrive, and you do because they're the people who create the value that people pay you for.
Right.
And so you want thriving developers. So that the pregnant pause right there was, well, and I have a story, but I'm not sure I can tell it, about a person who came to PSL, and here I am telling the story. After I'm wondering, can I tell the story? Came to PSL, and he was doing well in his department, and he was a director level. The organization had the three most senior cloud people leave in a month. And they all cited the existing director over the division or over the cloud development as the reason why. So he got shuffled. Over. He was asked to take that department. And that was about 9 months ago. And he said it's going really well. So you want the developers to be thriving because, one, they generate the value. Two, if they walk out the door, and obviously they do, they're going to take an incredible amount of institutional knowledge with them. And that, in terms of organizational cost, is very expensive because they've been with the company, I don't know, 5-10 years. They know things about how it's built, how things are working together. And when they leave, somebody else has to figure all of that out. Okay. So you want the developers to thrive. So that was Dr. Kat Hicks. And that was about people. So how do you make the bridge into people? One, find people that write about people. I mentioned, Jerry Weinberg wrote a lot about people. Started with the psychology of computer programming, I don't know, back in the 60s?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, I can give you a list of books that you can put in the meeting notes, that sort of a thing. And then learning about yourself is also very important. Andy Hunt wrote a book called Refactor Your Wetware.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how you learn, how you process information, and these sorts of things. So find out what you want to do and then start reading about it. And be used to the idea that there's no right answer.
Right.
When you work with people, you do be empathetic.
Right.
Because someday it will be you in that situation. Right. And ambiguity and be comfortable with ambiguity and be empathetic with people. Be curious, not judgmental, in the words of Ted Lasso.
Right. Right. Yeah. And as you say, it's always about people. One thing that I learned attending the PSL was more about myself and how I act as a leader and what type of leadership. But like whomever goes to the PSL comes out from it with some insight. It could be different, but everyone that has been to, I have heard good things on them from them.
Everybody comes to PSL from a different place in their career,
right?
With different experiences and hoping to find different things. So there's 24 people in a workshop. There's very possibly 30 or 35 different significant learnings from it. It's not a one-for-one relationship.
So let's just talk about the one that piqued my interest. You mentioned that we can find time to talk about your agile coaching experience working, but you've said that you're focusing on growth method. It's something that you mentioned at the leadership level, at the middle level, and at the working level. So tell us more about that. I'm very interested to hear, and I'm sure the audience would be.
All right. Is it possible for me to share my screen?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Let me see if I, here we go. I don't know. Yeah, that looks like it worked. So when we think of software development, we often think of something like, we get a story or a JIRA ticket, we work this ticket, and we then move it from doing to done, and then we go get the next one. So that would be up here in this little, these blue things. And software has four essential difficulties. And this is right here. This comes from the work of Fred Brooks, skipped a groove. And the problems are, number one is complexity. Everything we do is new and different, because if we were going to write the same code we wrote yesterday, we would just use the code we wrote yesterday, you know, right. Classes, functions, subroutines. So everything we do, even though it's just software and programming, everything we do is new.
Right.
So that adds complexity. Conformance. There are no universal laws in software development. When you think of the physical world, you know, acceleration due to gravity is 9.8 meters per second squared. Always. And yet, you know, if you're at the North Pole, it might be slightly different than it is at the equator, but essentially for math purposes, things conform to natural laws. There is no such natural law, no such set of governing rules in software. We got some great ideas, you know, but nothing that says it's got to be that way. The third one is changeability, because software is incredibly changeable. It's malleable. And that allows us to go in and make changes. Now, when you're starting to make changes in a program that's been running for 20 years, you want to be very careful, because some changes are probably easier. You can probably change concrete and rebar easier than you can change some programs, but that's not always the case. And the last one was invisibility. There's no representation of running software in space-time. It's invisible. You can see the inputs, you can see the outputs, but what happens in between is invisible. And as you try to model this, and I was around when they started doing the modeling. So, you know, you had the entity relationship diagrams. You had ways of describing your disks and all your storage and all of these things. It's invisible. There's no representation of it. So it's very difficult. So when most people think of software development, they think about this region, the blue ones. Right. Actually, it turns out that everything else on here, the purple, the orangish ones, the green, are also important. every bit as much important. So as you think about what does it take to produce quality software, it takes all of this.
Right.
Now, that was a long answer. That was just the preface. We haven't even arrived at the Gross Method yet, but we just did. So what we're doing with the Gross Method is we're talking about things that the Agile Manifesto never did. The Agile Manifesto said, hey, here's four values. They're great values. I think they're wonderful. I like them a lot. I think they make a lot of sense for various reasons. There's 12 principles. I'd have to stick a foot up here to get the other two, but let's assume that I have six fingers on each hand. The principles are good, but they don't say what to do. Mm-hmm. So here's the problem. You talk with somebody and you get all excited about Agile. Go be Agile. That doesn't say what to do. So with the Gross Method, what we're doing is we're saying, okay, here's what you do. But we get back to context. Everything is slightly different for everybody. So if I tell you, you have to do this thing, but it doesn't apply to your context, then I'm damaging you, I'm hurting your value stream, and creating unhappy developers. So there's research that was done, I believe it was for the Air Force, and Andy talks about it in Refactor Your Wetware. It's called the Dreyfus Model of Skill Acquisition. And there's different levels.
Right.
And so we have different levels. So a metaphor for this would be like cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In cooking, you have to follow a recipe. And so you follow the recipe, you measure everything out, you mix it just right. And let's say it's a cake. You put the cake in the oven and the instructions say, cook at 350 for 30 minutes.
Right.
So it's very rule and step oriented. If you're a novice, that's where you need to start. My oldest son is a chef. He goes, recipes are just a suggestion. And right. He'll start cooking. But he's the chef. He was trained. He did this for a living for, 15, 16 years. Right. He is an expert. He does not need the recipe. And so one of the things we talk about in the Gross Method is that, okay, you have to start off being safe. And the first level is mm-hmm. called safety and hygiene. These are the things you need to do so you don't burn your hands, so you don't cut yourself with a knife, and so that the product comes out good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is actually a zero level. That was level one. The zero level is you're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And there we talk about that. Because if you can't do certain things in your organization,
right.
Whether it's due to lack of psychological safety, whether it's a lack of technical skills, whether it's bad management, whether you're trying to do too much all at the same time, there is a, you're not ready for this yet. You need to stop. Well, no, you don't have to stop. You can keep going. People. So a book by DeMarco, what was the name of it? Why Does Software Cost So Much? By Tom DeMarco. Starts with an essay on why does software cost so much? Well, Jerry said, compared to what? I mean, software is expensive compared to what? And so apparently managers have this idea of how much something would cost. But here's the interesting thing that DeMarco notes. For all of our failures to deliver on time, they keep coming back and giving us more money. So what does that say? Well, it says that, well, maybe it's going to cost this much because that's how much it actually costs. But if you're not ready, Oh, so that let me put a button on that one. So that says you can still make money, stay in business, even if you're not willing to do level zero, which is you're not ready. The money's there. People are paying money all the time for software.
Right.
But our viewpoint is if you can't do these three basic things, four basic things, save your money, do not spend money on training, do not waste our time, you're not ready. We have other things to do with other people. And when you're ready, let us know. So you start off at, are you ready? I mean, have you ever walked into a place? Let me rephrase that. Let me not put you onto the spot.
Yeah. I don't mind. You can.
Well, I'm the people that I've worked with have always been interested in learning, doing a good job, and wanting to succeed. The senior vice presidents, though, exist on a different level, mm-hmm. and they're doing things that absolutely prevent what they say they would like to have. Case in point was WIP. Anybody who's studied Lean, Kanban, these sorts of things, know that you want to limit your work in progress. It creates a smooth flow. You use a pull system, not a push system. And things just generally get better when you limit WIP properly. This VP didn't see any problem. Well, just give him more work to do. And it's like, you're killing me here. And so I was the coach. And I was going, people, you only finished half of your work in the last 2 weeks. Why don't we just not take any more work, finish the next half, and then we'll start again after that spread. How many coaches were there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 coaches. This organization was scattered around the globe from San Jose, California, Atlanta, Paris, Germany, Israel, and India. India's way over there. In case you can't see where my finger is, it's over there. It's pointed at India. Yeah. We never made progress because management was always pushing WIP, pushing more work out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you come into this situation and there's a guy I met in South Africa. What is Donnie's last name? Remind me, I could give you the name for the book or for the notes. And he does a daily message that he sends out every day.
Okay.
And he talked about, he met this guy once that had been in the business for like 20, 30 years. And he was very seldom successful. And Donnie goes, Donnie Roux, R-O-U-X, goes, isn't that disappointing? And the gentleman goes, well, I'm always working on the next system. So even though I did not manage to find a way to get this one to change, I have touched people.
Right.
And when they move on, and they always do eventually, they will take what they've learned with them and change the next system. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how I got here, but here we are.
Right.
We have habits. We break them down into leadership, which would include like managers and up, teams, individuals, and users. And then we have a set of core principles, core habits also. Right. And these are things, they're free on the website. We are updating them right now. But if you have the ability, you can read it. So these things, based on research and our experience, are the things you should be doing.
Right.
And you figure out which ones you need, because we don't know which ones you need.
Right. And it's tailored towards where you are at the organization. These are for leadership. These are for middle layer. These are for if you're at the working level.
Yes. So, for example, let me see if I can find it real quick. For the core habits, we have agree to try. Because if people aren't willing to try, save your money, do not do any training, do not hire any coaching, because you're just going to waste your money. Agree to try, psychological safety, remove proxies to people. Mm-hmm. In other words, we think instead of using a Jira ticket, you should go talk to the user, find out what they want. Answers from experiments. We talk about how do you set up this experiment? How do you gauge whether or not the experiment's working? And then what we call small bites always, which is do little things. Nice. If you're going to do a global change initiative, you're almost guaranteed it's going to fail. But if you can get a little change, if you can get one team changing and they get another team changing, this does not play nicely with the I have to show profit in the next quarter.
Right.
Because in this is what you would call organic change. And Jerry talks about organic change in becoming a technical leader. But do little things and try to see how they're going. You know, that's part of the experiments. So then that was the core habits. And we've got like for leaders, share the vision, 30-minute thinking appointment, work in small, stable teams, measure actual delivery, lead the way, create free information flow. So then there's another set for the teams and another set for the individuals. And I'm not going to sit here and read them to you. You can go to go to growsmethod.com and click on them and read about them.
Sounds good. And I see that like you have the thinking guide on the picture here, and under thinking guide you have Kinnevan, Gross, Wardley Map, systems thinking. Are they interchangeable that you put them together, or they're related? Or like if you are more familiar, for example, with Wardley Map, you can use that in instead of Gross, or is there
So the thinking guides are different ways of thinking about something. So systems thinking talks about how everything is connected. Right. And then you have reinforcing loops and you have balancing loops. And so that's one way of looking at a system. The cool thing about Wardley Maps is Wardley Maps take a product and look at it, how it moves through time. So you start out at Genesis. This is new and novel. And then you move into a application-based area. So, okay, now I can use parts of this in an application. Then you end up with a product. And finally, you end up with a commodity. So if you think about the cloud.
Right.
You know, when it started back in the day, back in, what was it, 2005, 2006, it was very new and different. Nobody really knew what was going on. And everybody had to build their own because there was no way, standard way of doing this. If you build a cloud infrastructure today, you either are using, you have a very unique application that requires security or reliability, although with Amazon Web Storage, AWS, you know, the reliability is in the, you know, 99 point handful of digits.
Okay.
And if you were to build a web service today, a web cloud system, you know, the infrastructure, you'd be wasting money because Amazon has done this. They are so much better at it than you are. They've done it so many more times than you have. So that's the thing, cool thing about Wardley Maps. I'm going to skip over Gross for a moment. So the OODA, often called the OODA loop, which is actually sort of a version of systems thinking because it's observe, orient, decide, act. And that comes from the work of James Boyd, who was a fighter pilot in the Air Force. And they called him 42nd Boyd, because he had a standing bet that from an inferior position to a superior position, he could do that in 40 seconds or less. And there was a standing bet and he never lost. So basically what it means is he's flying along in his airplane. Somebody comes up to shoot him down. Within 40 seconds, Boyd will reverse it and he will be in a position to shoot the other one down. So there's a lot of stuff about the OODA loop. We haven't got time to talk about it, but a lot of work on it has expanded it to show how personality, family of origin, the culture you live in, all of these things impact how you orient. Observe is, here's data. Orient means, what does this data mean? What should I do with this data? Decide is, well, I'm going to do this, and then act is what they do next.
Right.
And then that action creates a change in the environment, which provides you with new data to observe. From a business standpoint, the goal would be to execute your loop faster than your competitor's loop, because that way the competitor is always responding to what you have done and does not have time to become creative and force you to change something based on what they've done.
Right.
Complexity, human systems dynamics, Glenda Ouyang's work.
And you have a whole bunch for people facets there.
Connected
to TP guys. Yeah.
So you're moving me along. Are we running out of time already? Okay.
No, but my point, it's so many perspectives to look at, and
yeah.
I haven't tried Grows, but I'm going to look into that. What would be a good source if people have questions about, like, if they see something on the website, for example, take a small bite size, right? And if they don't know if this experiment that they do is a small bite, is there a community, is there you that they can reach out to? Training that happening on that?
We do have workshops that are available. They're cleverly on the website. And these can be delivered. We can do these workshops remotely. Mm-hmm. We did a workshop with all of the interesting companies, the Austrian Railroad.
Yeah.
You don't really think of railroads as agile people, but right. I mean, think about it. You're drilling tunnels from opposite sides. You really want to make sure these two tunnels meet in the middle somewhere.
Right.
Very, very cautious, very determined people.
Right.
It was a great workshop. There's an article on the website about it. I think it was from January this year. They actually only used three of the methods or the habits. It was vision, agree to try, and I forget what the third one was. Right. It's in the on the website. Asked Einstein, this is apocryphal, I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard it said that somebody once asked Einstein what the speed of light was. And he says, well, I don't know. And I go, well, you're a physicist. How can you not know? And he goes, why would I remember something I can go look up? So what was it? It was vision, agree to try. I forget what the third one was, but they got the product. They got the thing going because they agreed to try and they knew where they were going.
Right.
I have a clever address. It's on at growsmethod.com. Excuse me. We do have workshops.
Yeah, and we are going to put the links to the website on the podcast notes as well.
So all the stuff that's sort of in the pinkish color, that's your human aspect of software development.
Right.
You know, team facets. Hackman is our go-to. Richard Hackman did research on how to build a team, and he actually used military intelligence teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because And that work actually fairly well parallels software development from the standpoint that highly technical, very specific, and you're dealing with amphorous. Light, fluffy things don't really exist in the world. You're working with information and intelligence. You're not working with a shovel and coal.
Right.
For lack of a button, I forget the exact word I'm looking for.
Right.
So that's sort of what we're trying to accomplish with Grows, is to address this space.
Right.
And obviously my copy of the shared screen is over there, because I keep going that way with my hand.
Right.
All right.
Sounds good.
Now what?
Yeah, thank you, Don. You mentioned a couple of books, more than a couple of books, as some references. Is there anything that through your whole career, I mean, we talk about PSL and how that was instrumental for you. Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience that is very a resource, a book, a method, something that is very instrumental was for you and you want to share with the audience?
So since I came out of manufacturing, where we used feedback to control what we were doing, systems thinking came very naturally to me because it's feedback loops. So that was one that really was probably one of the first things I noticed. More recently, in the world of viewing, a gentleman by the name of Dave Snowden created a way of looking at problems called the Kinevin method. And the breakthrough for me in that one was that, oh wait, we have five different options on a problem. You know, is it a clear problem? You know, this, we know how to do this, blah 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 blah. Is it a, you know, court dialogue across the, it's not a grid, but the across from it would be a complex problem. So a complex problem is more difficult to solve. But if you try to use the same methods of solving a complex problem as you do a clear problem, you're eventually going to end up in chaos.
Yeah.
And so that's that. And when you're in chaos, you have a different set of methods you use to work.
Right.
So I came across that in like 2012, and that was very, very aha for me. Mm-hmm. And then the most recent, I guess about the same time I was going through human systems dynamics, which is Glenda O. Yang's work, and her books, the one I think would be very useful would be Facilitating Organizational Change. Mm-hmm. And then Influencing Patterns for Change is another book of her, and the topic I really like. And what it does is you look at organizations in terms of containers, differences, and exchanges. So a container would be something that holds focus. So that could be your career, it could be your team, it could be the code you're working on, these sorts of things. Differences are within containers and between containers. So we are in the container of this podcast. There are differences between us. We are, I don't know, my oldest child is 48. I suspect they're about your age, maybe?
Yeah.
So there's a difference.
Yeah.
I've got a little more gray, but we have similarities.
Right.
We've been to PSL. We're involved with software development. And so the difference is, you know, which do you want to amplify? Do you want to amplify differences or do you want to reduce differences? And that affects exchanges, which is the flow of value. It could be information, money, power, these sorts of things. So her work actually, for me, is a little more interesting. So while Canevin is interesting, it doesn't give you any handles to change. You know, I cannot pull this lever and see something change. With human systems dynamics, they do. They say, okay, well, change the container. And in that case, you might be swapping teammates. You know, one team member goes out, new team member comes in. The classic would be the corporate reorg, which would just change everything. And then exchanges, you know, add a feedback loop, take a feedback loop away, see if there's a way to shift information around. And then the one that was most recently aha was Wardley, with Wardley mapping and how it approaches products and product development. And his book is free on the internet somewhere. So that's one of the things I like about it. These all have very active communities of development support. NPSL.
50th year anniversary coming up next year. So hopefully some of our audience can get on that. Thank you, Don. We are getting to the almost end of the recording time, end of the podcast. Is there anything else that you want to share? I'm sure there are plenty of things that we can talk about, but our time is limited. Is there anything that last minute that you want to share with our audience? And then we can say goodbye.
I was talking with Jason Little of Lean Change this morning, and we were chatting, and I said, one of the things that I'm really excited about is that I'm seeing more and more women in positions of importance. You know, I'm thinking of like Dr. Forsgren with the DORA and the Accelerate book on DevOps. Amy Edmondson on psychological safety, Dr. Hicks with the Developer Thriving Framework, Charity Majors, who works at Charity Majors works at something.io. I'll figure it out. Jessica Kurd, also known as Jessitron, is a fascinating thinker. And so I'm excited about that, in that the research shows that teams that have women do better. And if we can get more women involved in this domain, I think we'll be able to make real progress in terms of honeycomb.io. See, I told you I'd find it. Honeycomb.io. Jessica works there also. We can make software development a place for happy, thriving people. You know, Jerry's goal was to make happy. His goal was to help make smart people happy.
Make us
happy. And I think we have a shot at it.
That's a very good note to close on. Make smart people have a shot at making smart people happy. Because if they are happy, they can make other people's lives happier because they're smart. Thank you, Don, for being on the show. If people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to do so?
So the default method is don@donaldegray.com. And I would respond to anything we've talked about today. So if you want to talk about Canevin, if you want to talk about Wardley, I'm still learning Wardley. I'm not you know, I'm not one of the people at the front of that, but it's a very useful tool. The Gross Method, if you'd like to learn more about the Gross Method. And then, like I said, I also have don@grossmethod.com. So we kept mentioning PSL. The website is congruentchange.com. And I'm don@congruentchange.com, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. You can find me in a lot of places.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Don. I appreciated your time, and I hope I enjoyed it a lot. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as well, and I hope to have you again sometime soon.
I'm tired of listening to me. I think you should go for Andy Hunt next. Has Jason Little been on the program?
Yes, I had Jason. And
you had Jason. I would go for Andy next.
For sure.
Yeah. Or Jessica Kerr. She's fascinating. If you need a reference for her or an idea about her, go to the 2019 Ruby Conference keynote.
Okay.
It's an excellent presentation.
Yeah. Thank you for the accommodation. I'll follow up with yourself and then.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah. Thank you.